fight for love. Welcome to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rauffingfeiner, powered by Moms Rising. Thank you so much for joining our show today. We have some really important news, some important actions for you to take. And we're going to start out talking about the infant formula shortage, what you can do to help make sure that people who need infant formula can get it. And also we have tips of do's and don'ts if you are a person in need of infant formula about how to get your infant formula. It's a really, really good segment. After that, we jump in with Millie Campbell of the Black Women's Roundtable talking about what's happening in the U.S. Supreme Court, what's happening with voting rights, and what's happening with our bodily autonomy. Next up, we dive in to hear about the National Council of Jewish Women, their most recent convening with thousands of people coming together across the country to help bring forward justice in America. And we close the show hearing about some excellent, positive, proactive movements for change that are happening at the state level and how that's impacting change at the federal level as well. We're going to jump right in with our first guest. We have a guest with some very, very, very important information for you about the infant formula crisis in America. Alyssa Schmier of Moms Rising. Welcome, Alyssa.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm okay, but worried. I'm worried because we have an infant crisis in America where people who need infant formula are unable to get it. Can you share a little bit about the scope of our problem in case people who are listening haven't heard about it yet?
It's a very big problem. And unfortunately for people who feed their babies formula, it's been going on for quite a while, but you might have just kind of heard about it in the news recently. So basically what happened was back in February, Abbott Labs, who makes Similac and other major brands of infant formula, had the largest recall in American history because there was a bacteria found in some of their product, which led to four children being sick and unfortunately two babies dying that they believe, you know, could be traced back to the tainted baby formula. So there was this massive recall. And then as a result of that, we started to see a shortage of formula, in particular the brands that were recalled. But now it's kind of extended beyond just the Abbott brands into almost every single type of formula. The statistics are saying that nationwide, 43% of formula is experiencing a shortage in major retailers. And there's certain states that have seen it go all the way up to 48%. And when the news kind of really exploded about a week and a half ago, that's when we started to see a run on every other type of formula on the market. And unfortunately, formula that's usually reserved for children with dietary restrictions, dairy sensitivity or allergies, babies who have major digestive issues, even those formulas are almost impossible to find at this point. And because of that, retailers have also started to limit the amount of formula you can buy. So a lot of major stores will only let you buy, you know, 2-3 cans at a time.
This is horrifying, and it's horrifying on so many levels. So I have so many follow-up questions. But the first is, for people who are listening and are concerned about the ability to get the formula that they need to feed their infants, do you have any tips? I just want to give people tips before we start talking about the policies.
Yeah, I have a lot of tips, and Moms Rising is actually going to be putting this up. Some of it is already on the blog at www.momsrising.org, but we're going to be updating that as well. We definitely have kind of like some basic do's and don'ts, and I can tell you that I've been dealing with this myself personally. So, you know, definitely want to pay attention to the tips to make sure that you're finding the formula you need, aren't wasting your time, and most importantly, keeping your baby safe. So in terms of do's, we are telling people to check with their healthcare provider, whether that's a nurse or pediatrician, before you switch your baby's formula. So every baby's different. Some babies have no problem switching formula. Some, it can be a major issue. So you want to talk to your healthcare provider before you switch formulas. And I know a lot of people are having to switch formulas right now because what they normally feed their baby is just unavailable. Another thing to do, and this is a big one that I learned the hard way, is call the stores before you drive to them. Gas prices are really high right now, and the online inventory is completely unreliable. I was personally told by a store manager that it's completely unreflective of what he has in his store because it's gathered at the national, like through the national store, but not at the local store. So you're going to want to call any store before jumping in your car and driving over. And you could also ask them, like, when do you get your stock in? When do you put, you know, when does your shipments come in? When do you put it on the shelves? Can you reserve 2 cans for me? So I think having that conversation with your local stores. The other is don't just rely on the big name stores like the Walmarts and the CVS's and kind of those big grocery stores. You're going to want to check at local convenience stores, ethnic food markets, food banks. Some religious institutions have started to get some formula. Your pediatrician's office might have some free samples for you. Locally, independently owned pharmacies are a good place to check. So you're going to want to start to get, you know, a little bit more creative and not just go to those big name stores. The other big thing that's kind of popped up is the parent and mom community has really stepped up to the plate where, you know, traffic industry has failed. And so check in with your local parent groups. There's a lot of formula hunting Facebook groups that I've become a part of that have been super helpful. Like they'll post pictures of the shelves at your local Walmart or your local Costco and say they had X amount of, you know, boxes of brand formula available. People might have some formula that they'd be willing to sell you or trade or donate to you. So kind of tapping into these trusted communities and local parent groups. We just want you to be careful about paying for formula on the internet from any source that you don't know or might not be trustworthy. And then you're also going to want to check with your local WIC office. If you're having trouble finding formula, affording formula, if you might want some lactation assistance, if relactating or pumping is an option for you, we know that's not an option for a lot of people, but if it is and you need some help, you can go to your local WIC office and they'll be able to give you so much amazing information. And I just wanted to touch upon a couple of don'ts because, you know, we really have the safety of our babies as the most important thing that we're thinking about right now. And we know that there's a lot of parents that are stressed and scared and desperate right now. And they might be taking actions that they're not aware could harm their baby. So the main don'ts are do not dilute the formula. It's called formula for a reason. The recipe on the back of the can is providing your baby with the nutrients they need to be healthy. So do not dilute it with like extra water or anything like that. Another big one is do not make homemade infant formula. Unfortunately, the recipes for homemade infant formula has been rampant on the internet, and it's really, really dangerous. The FDA is very much urging parents not to do this, and we can't stress enough to not use homemade formula. The other thing you can't do is just switch your baby over to cow milk if they're under the age of one. For a lot of different reasons, cow's milk is not an acceptable or replacement for formula or breast milk. It doesn't have like the right proteins and minerals. The other thing you shouldn't be using is like, do not switch to juice or goat's milk or Pedialyte or other liquids as a replacement for formula or breast milk. The other thing not to do is to not use the recalled formula. So as I mentioned, there were a number of children who got sick and died from using the recalled formula. So you're going to want to return that if you still have like the receipt or anything from where you bought it, you can actually get refunded or you're just going to want to throw it out. But I will say that all other forms of formula are safe right now to use. So you don't have to worry about the safety of other formulas, just the recalled formula. And finally, don't use toddler formula to feed your babies who are under one. Young infants and toddlers have different dietary needs. And so what you might be seeing when you go to the store is the toddler formula is on the shelf, but the infant formula is nowhere to be found. These are not interchangeable. So you're not going to want to use toddler formula in order to feed, like, say, a 5-month-old.
All of that information is also going to be up on Moms Rising on our blog. So go to www.momsrising.org and you can find that information in case you didn't take it all down, because it's a lot to remember. So Alyssa, now that we've got the tips and the do's and the don'ts out of the way, can you share a little bit about what's happening politically at the federal level to help address the shortage, stop the shortage, and get the infant formula back on our shelves?
This is kind of like an ever-changing thing that is happening, you know, hour to hour, it's different. But there's a couple of actions that the federal government has started to take to kind of address this. And you know, I want to remind people that this was caused by an action taken by a private industry, but there is a role for the federal government since we're kind of at a crisis point. So President Biden has rolled out a couple of steps that he's taking. So he's cutting some of the red tape, especially for WIC recipients, and doing a bunch of waivers. And some of this they took, you know, did immediately after the recall. This is really important, the WIC piece of this, because half of formula in this country is consumed by WIC families. And so we need to make sure that they're able to get access to any form of formula that they're able to purchase. He's also increasing the supply of imports. So right now there's a lot of restrictions around formula from made in other countries. 90% of the formula consumed in the United States is made in the United States. And obviously there is major issues that we're going to have to look into in terms of like why we're not importing in more, why there's a monopoly. There's only like four companies that make all the formula in this country. So one of them going offline caused basically a national crisis in terms of formula. So the president is doing a whole bunch in that department. He announced just yesterday that they're going to be using the Defense Production Act to fly in formula, which will let them kind of overstep any sort of supply chain issues that we've been seeing, and they're going to be flying them over on, I think, military planes from the United States government. He's also cracking down on price gouging. Unfortunately, we, as you normally see, there are people out there who are taking advantage of desperate parents and racketing up the price of formula. And so the FTC is kind of looking into all of that, cracking down on bad actors, that type of thing. So those are some of the immediate steps that he's been taking. I also know that the White House has been in conversation with the formula producers and doing whatever they can do within their power to make sure that formula production is stepped up, that the formula gets onto the shelves as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the original estimation of like when Abbott formulas, so Similac and other brands could get out there was 6 to 8 weeks. And that was announced last week. And obviously that's 2 more months on top of the 2 months that parents have already been experiencing this. And that is far too long. So we're putting a lot of pressure on Congress and the White House and the administration and the private industry, because we need to be talking in weeks, not months at this point, because parents are basically running out of formula.
Where should people go to take action to help speed up the resolution of this crisis?
Yeah. So Moms Rising is launching today a new newsletter called Feed Your Baby, #formula shortage. And this will also be up on our blog. And you can sign up for the newsletter to get up to date information about what's going on with the shortage, figure out how you can share your story, how you can create real change, actions that are going on in Congress, et cetera, et cetera. This is like the best way to stay up to date. We'll, of course, be putting everything up on our blog. But signing up for the newsletter is a good way to get all that information really quickly. We're also going to be rolling out a social media toolkit so you can kind of share with your network a lot of those do's and don'ts and other ways, information that people need on formula and ways to take action. So all of that will be on our blog at www.momsrising.org. And also if you get our emails, check your inbox, like in the next day or so, because you'll get an email about signing up for the newsletter.
Perfect. Thank you. And is there hope that this will be resolved quickly?
Well, it has to be resolved quickly. This isn't like, you know, a lot of people have been comparing this to the toilet paper shortage that we saw at the beginning of COVID. The difference here is this is, food for babies who only have 2 choices of what to eat. They could only be given formula or breast milk. Those are their only 2 options. And so it has to be resolved very quickly. Otherwise, we're going to start to see some major health problems. We're going to start to see babies going hungry. I mean, it's completely unacceptable that this happened in the first place. And we sure as heck can't live in a country where this would be allowed to continue on for months on end. So I think a resolution is in the works. I think it's taking longer than it should. But I think, unfortunately, it took a while for folks to kind of wake up to this and have a story be told, both in the news and also have it like filter up to decision makers. But I think now that they recognize the magnitude of this crisis, action is being taken.
Thank you. Thank you for all you're doing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing the do's, the don'ts, and the ways that we can take action to help resolve this crisis. Thank you, Alyssa, for being on.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but stick around. We'll be right back with our next guest talking about what's happening at the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll be back in a quick flash. If we're going to fight, we're going to fight for love. Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rau Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising. We are joined by an amazing, spectacular, wonderful, nation-changing guest, Melanie Campbell of the Black Women's Roundtable. Welcome, Melanie.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Kristen. Great to be here with you one more time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming again, for sharing what's going on. And we want to talk about what is going on right now. We have so many things going on. For you, what are the top couple policy areas that you are looking at making sure we fix immediately?
First of all, top of mind, where we're focusing in is Black Women's Roundtable, and you as one of our sister allies and partners, we really are really lifting up the issues that are impacted around the attack on women's right to control our bodies. Reproductive rights, reproductive justice, and also voting rights. And so, as you know, for the last 8-9 months, we've been having a lot of direct actions around it and other kinds of ways to elevate and keep putting pressure on the Congress to keep fighting to get something done. And we know we've had a lot of losses of late, but that doesn't mean we won't win in the end. So for us, we're really pushing to keep that and connect the dots to people. It's an election year. And we know through a lot of our recent research that Black women are concerned about reproductive rights as an issue. Especially after what happened with the leak in the Supreme Court and saying that they're gonna overturn Roe versus Wade. So it is a concern, but also voting rights. And understanding that voting rights are really the cornerstone of us being able to protect our rights and freedoms. So that's on the top of mind. And one other thing, of course, what's been going on with the killings in Buffalo. I did want to say that is has been really gut-wrenching and a lot of concern around what that could mean for possible violence in the election season.
Oh, it's so heavy, all that's happening and all that needs to be done. If people are listening and are feeling the heaviness and like they can't do anything, like they don't have any power, what can they do to support what you're doing at the Black Women's Roundtable? How can people support no matter where they live? One of the things, listeners, that is important to know is that Melanie Campbell organizes speak outs on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court in Congress, really make sure that nobody who has the power to make the changes we seek can ignore the changes that are necessary. And so how can people support who aren't there?
Well, first of all, thank you and Moms Rising for supporting us and being a partner consistently over these months. And so I thank you and all of your members for that. But if we're going to be in Washington, D.C. in front of the Supreme Court on the 25th, between 9:30 and 11:30. So if any listeners are in the area, come join us. Come stand with us. We're going to have a silent protest that will, in an animated way, try to lift up the fact that we will not allow ourselves to be silenced. And then we will have organization leaders, from really across the country who will come together and some state leaders to just keep the drumbeat going. Just because you lose one round, you keep fighting. We are at war in this country, and I don't mean that in a way that's offensive, but we are in a war for our democracy, our freedoms, our rights are really under attack, and so it takes all. So if you can't be there, totally understand, but get on that phone on that day. And from 9 to 5, call your U.S. senators. Call them and thank them if they're on the right side of where you stand, if they are on the right side of protecting our rights, our voting rights, our reproductive rights, and promoting Build Back Better, and all that means around issues that impact our families economically, to have economic security, and so many other things. But also, if you're in a state where they're not supportive, it's very split, you know, Senate, and it's in the Senate that we're focusing on. Because a lot of things that that many folks vote, especially women, voted for, unfortunately, things get passed in the House, and then you go on the other side of the street, and it gets stalled. And so they need to hear from you. Your senators at 202-224-3121, or if you have a Moms Rising number that they should use, just pick up that phone. It makes a difference. It really does make a difference. So 9 to 5 on May the 25th, make those phone calls.
One of the things that you mentioned is that all of these things are connected. Our attack on our bodily autonomy, our attack on our voting rights, the attack on racial justice, gender justice, and economic justice, all of these are tied together. And one of the ways that we can tie together the solutions is also to make sure that everybody has access to voting who wants to vote. When we step back and look, some people say, what happened with bodily autonomy and the leak from Politico that the U.S. Supreme Court is about to overturn Roe v. Wade? What happened? Well, we can look at what happened. Donald Trump, our former president, put 3 extraordinarily conservative, extraordinarily activist conservative, on the bad way activist, justices on the Supreme Court. That's not okay, you know, but we can fix that through our votes, through our voices, and through multiple different levers of change. And Melanie, one thing I wanted to just lift up a little bit is about the attack that you talked about, the war. It's also, we're hearing from moms feeling very much like a war on moms. We have the infant formula shortage, as if nobody realized that we have to feed infants. Hello, people have been ignoring that, ignoring care. We've got the lack of Build Back Better getting through the Senate. We've got the attack on abortion care, which of course, 6 out of 10 people who get and receive abortions are moms, and studies show that that's primarily out of love of existing family members and the need to care for existing family members. And so what is your take about how this moment is impacting women and women of color in particular?
Well, we have to decide if the progress that women have made, that we're willing to let that go by the wayside. Because when you control my body, you control everything about my life. And the government should not be in that space. I tell people, everybody has a right to decide where they stand on it, if it's a faith issue, whatever that may be. But what you don't have a right to do is control my body. You don't have that right. And the reality is that it's also the history has shown us what happens. And we are talking about that women will be criminalized. And who's going to get criminalized the most? Criminal justice system shows there's a racial disparity. So there's an extra concern. Women who are in the reproductive justice space who lead that groups like Sister Song and others who are really out there, who really try to connect the intersectional relations, those connecting points about what happens when this happens. There is a domino effect that happens to people's lives. And so in many of these states where you're talking about not being able, what defense, I've got how many states that are already ready to, quote unquote, if and when Roe is overturned, already going to automatically put these laws on the books. And some of those laws are talking about, how is it you can say that a child who gets raped by their by someone or a incest situation, that child should have to go to term in a whose body's not even ready for it, right? And the fact that if you are there's a situation where your life is in danger, and this is the only way you can survive, and you say this politician gets to say, well, that's too bad. You just have to die. Who made you God? Right. And to make a decision. And so it is really important that it's so, even though we're trying to fight this on the national level, we have to, it's what we've allowed to happen and who's allowed to get elected in the governor's mansions and who's in the state legislatures. And a lot of times we don't vote like we should in those races. And so you're talking about states' rights. Now, as a Black woman in America, states' rights has never been to the benefit of Black people in this country. That is why we've always had to go to the federal government to protect our rights as African Americans and other people of color. And so that reality for us is quite traumatizing in a way to think that states will be able to roll back people in the LGBT community. It's a domino effect of how and who gets to decide what family looks like, right? So many things that our younger generation, for the most part, is not in that space. And so we've been really encouraging young people, this is your future, right? That's at stake and your opportunity as women to be able to dream big dreams, to allow little girls to be able to dream big dreams. You want to go someplace that, and the truth of the matter is a lot of them, if you dug deep enough, you'd find out somebody in their family had an abortion. Might've been their wife, might've been their daughter, might've been their cousin or the neighbor down the street, but yet you want to control what happens in somebody else's home.
It's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. My grandma passed away a couple months ago, about a week shy of her 106th birthday. And she, in the couple months before she passed away, she was watching what was happening. And she pulled me aside and she goes, Kristen, you might be feeling a little tired. You might be feeling a little old. You might be feeling like you've been doing this for a long time. But I'm here to tell you, you are not old. You cannot be tired. And there are generations who have been in this fight and generations coming up behind you. You have to keep fighting to make sure that every single person has bodily autonomy, that every single person has choice. And so we only have a minute left, but I share that with you, Melanie, but also with our listeners, because I know that it's overwhelming. What's happening. Right. The attacks are happening on multiple different fronts all at the same time. And clearly, there is no gender justice without racial justice, without economic justice, and the attacks are happening in all those areas right now at the same time. And so I share that story for myself to remember to keep fighting, but also to you, just in closing, and to see if you have any fast advice for people to keep hope alive so they can keep fighting for justice.
Don't lose your joy in the fight.
Yes.
Right? Don't lose your joy in the fight. Don't let them take that away from you. I get tired, I get weary, but one thing I say, and hearing your grandmother's words, we say, don't get weary, you know? We're gonna win, and we the fight is a continuum. And we're on the side of inclusion and opportunity, and that everyone has a right to have a joyful life and opportunity. That's all we're fighting for. And we're fighting against those who don't believe that for everybody, only for a few.
Absolutely right. So everybody, please join, please support, please call your senators, like Melanie said. Black Women's Roundtable, Melanie Campbell, thank you so much for being on. Thanks for all you do. Thank you for protecting our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. Next up, we're going to hear about what's happening at the National Council of Jewish Women and how you can support. We'll be back in just a brief moment. Fight for love. Welcome back to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rao Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising. We are joined by a spectacular, amazing, wonderful guest you are going to love, 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 love hearing from. Sheila Katz of the National Council of Jewish Women, also known as NCJW. Welcome, Sheila.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so thrilled that you're on. You are moving change. You are moving mountains. You are building a national movement that is stronger than ever before. And that movement is needed more than ever before. At the National Council of Jewish Women, what are your top priorities that everyone should know about?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. But really, at the end of the day, we're working to protect women, children, and families in the United States. And we're the oldest Jewish women's organization in this country, 129 years old. I think we look good for 129. but our core issues have always remained the same. And we're doing it through courts. We're doing it through voting. We're doing it through reproductive rights. And we're doing it by standing up for women and families everywhere and trying to normalize our needs into society.
And you just recently had a big convening in Washington, D.C. that put big pressure on Congress. There were thousands of people there, both in person and online. You had hundreds of partners. What are you hearing from people around the country?
Well, I mean, first, thank you for coming because you were there, too. What we're hearing loud and clear is that we're tired of the system not working for us. And I think after a few years of going through COVID, when everybody's talking about this great resignation, I like to refer to it as the great reality that policies don't exist that support women in the workforce, because it's women who are leaving. It's women moms who aren't having what they need, a baby formula shortage, all of these things as our bodily autonomy is up for attack. And I think one of the things we have to do in our organization as faith leaders, as moral leaders, is actually name when things are not normal. And what we're seeing is Congress and all sorts of people saying, oh yeah, this is totally fine right now. And it's important that we get up and say, actually, no, it's not. The system isn't working for us. It wasn't designed to work for us. And we're not going to accept that it's not working for us.
And that is so important. And you're doing that through so many different levels. How can people get involved? How can they support? What can people do?
Sure. I mean, ncjw.org is a place they could sign up as an advocate. We have advocates in every state, and we have 60 nonprofits around the country. So if they're in a place with a hub, they should get connected locally, because statewide change and local change is where it's at to make a difference these days. And then lately, I'd say our big push on reproductive freedom and abortion justice is the fact that the Jewish voice is often left out. And so in addition to abortion being a racial justice issue, an economic justice issue, a healthcare issue, a dignity issue, it goes on and on. It's also a religious freedom issue, because Jews don't believe that a fetus is a life. And so we've been trying to raise our voices to say, you know, the Supreme Court legislating when life begins is a problem for minority Jewish folks in this country. And also it's in line with Muslim tradition as well. And so you'll hear a lot of that from us, because we want to chip away at the fact that we're anticipating Roe getting overturned.
I think that's so important to mention religious freedoms and the fact that we do not have religious freedoms in America, that the U.S. Supreme Court is actually stopping freedoms with the potential upcoming decision related to Roe v. Wade that was leaked to Politico. How can people find out more about what's happening with different faith traditions and religious freedoms and how that impacts policies?
Yeah, well, for the Jewish tradition, I'll say, you know, go to rabbisforrepro.org. That's a program we started to engage Jewish clergy. We have 1,800 rabbis around the country, from Reform to Orthodox, all denominations, teaching and preaching about Judaism and abortion. And so there's a ton of resources there sharing, like it's in the Torah, it's in our texts, you know, so it's not something like randomly we're just saying. And so we love people actually reading about it and learning about it. And then I would turn to places like Muslim Advocates, among other Muslim organizations, to learn from other faith traditions. But really, in many ways, in the same way in which women often feel left out of society or that things aren't designed for us, I'd say, as a Jewish woman, I hear people talk about faith all the time. And I think what they mean to say is Christian. And so we're trying to basically hold up a mirror and say, as we talk about faith leaders, as we talk about faith organizing and activism, and as we have people who are senators voting against the Women's Health Protection Act, saying it's because of religious liberty, they can't vote for it. We have to say, well, whose religious liberty are you talking about? And who are you talking about when it's a faith leader? Because we know the table is stronger when more voices are there, and particularly when minority voices are there. And in the faith world, that's often Jews and Muslims.
It's so important. I hope everybody goes to ncjw.org, gets involved, stays involved. What is keeping you involved? This is a time where we're hearing from lots of people, you know, there's attacks on both gender justice, racial justice, economic justice, everything is under attack just in this last week, but also this past years, months, you know, it's a lot. What's keeping you going?
I think it's my anger. I feel like I'm turning my anger into action, and I'm doing it with a lot of other people. We have to keep going. And my dear colleague, Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, actually said we need to not picture this as a marathon, but as a relay race, which means we got to get it going. We got to get as hard as we can. And when we need to step out, because we sometimes do to take care of ourselves, we pass the baton to somebody else to pick it up. So I think we need as many people as we can to show up, to show outrage, to show anger, to speak up, to make change. And when they got a rest, take a rest, pass the baton, and then come back in when you can.
It's so important. Now, when you're taking action, what do you see as the most effective? So for people out there who are outraged, they're turning their anger to action, they're ready to make change. How do you see people being the most effective, and how could they do that through NCJW?
Yeah, I actually, I think there's this myth that we can make massive change right away and as one person. I think it takes a village. And in Jewish tradition, which also is the same with Christian tradition and others, I actually think we often hold up Moses as this amazing leader, but Moses was nothing without Miriam and Aaron. And so figuring out how we work together and build our strengths is certainly critical. But really, I think back to the civil rights time, and I think about what it meant that in actually a moment of real anger and of real hopelessness, Mamie Till Brady gave an open casket for her son, Emmett Till. And that picture ended up in a newspaper in Alabama, which inspired a woman who had never been engaged in any kind of training, who could have turned inward, who could have hid, you know, to show up for activist training for the first time. And 100 days later, Rosa Parks changed history. And I think about that, she didn't set out to change history, she just showed up. And so to me, it's the small actions that make big change. And you don't know who the tipping point person is going to be. We don't know who the tipping point moment is going to be. But if all of us show up, it's bound to be one of us.
I love that line. If all of us show up, the tipping point is bound to be one of us. That is really important and so, so, so hopeful in this moment. One of the things that we're seeing is a lot of assumptions that all politicians, all elected leaders are not working for the better good of our families, of our communities. Now, I know you and I get to have a special eye in to some incredible champions of change who are also elected to Congress, but the rampant cynicism that is flooding our country is kind of putting a same sort of bad taste over all politicians. How do you tell people the difference between, you know, there are some politicians who are really, really, really toxic and harmful, like the malignant Cheeto, also known as Donald Trump. And then there are others who are just spectacular champions for justice.
Yeah. I think in any profession, anywhere you go, there are people who are causing harm and there are people who aren't. And there are people who are your champions and there are people who aren't. And I think lifting up our champions is really, really important and sometimes doesn't happen as much as it needs to. So, you know, one of the things I love that I've seen Moms Rising do and others is thanking people when they do the right thing. And like positive behavior needs to be reinforced. This is funny. I'm like having flashbacks. I used to be an elementary school teacher, right? They say all the time, spend the time on the students doing the things that are right, not the students doing the things that are wrong. And we've become obsessed with calling people out instead of lifting up the people who are doing the right thing. And so I do think our elected officials who are showing up for us, who are voting their values, ought to be given a little bit more love and respect. You know, they can't change the fact often that their colleagues aren't doing what we need them to do, but we can continue to show support in these moments and we can continue to apply pressure. But they're not going to be motivated to apply that pressure unless they feel that love and support from us too.
I've found that a thank you goes so far, so much farther than yelling at people, including elected officials. Are there any elected officials that you want to shout out and lift up right now just with our listeners? Because there are so many champions, listeners. Like, there are so many people in Congress who are actually doing the right thing. And I wondered if there's a couple. I know you probably can't name them all because there are actually quite a lot.
I know. I'm like, am I going to get in trouble for naming them? Well, let me first just say that Congresswoman Kathy Manning has been a mentor of mine for over 15 years. And I'll say when I was 22 years old, I asked if she would have lunch with me before she was a congresswoman because I was just in awe. And she had no reason to say yes to like hang out with a 22-year-old. She said yes. And like the content of that conversation changed the trajectory of my career. So I will always and forever, you know, appreciate when women kind of lift up other women and take the time to mentor women. And then I got like my OG congresswomen, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Jan Schakowsky and Lois Frankel, who are lifelong NCJW members. I just, when I'm with the three of them, I feel like I'm with family. And I'm really working with champions of women, children, and families. And they're doing it from a place of Jewish value. So I can deeply connect in that way.
And they're making changes. I think this is the important thing. Like a lot of times people don't see the changes that are made. The House, the U.S. House, just did pass the Build Back Better Act. It got stuck in the Senate with one man.
Yeah, and the Women's Health Protection Act. They've done so much. And I feel like, you know, to dismiss all of them as if they're not doing their job, you know, isn't a good thing. And obviously got to give a shout out. I moved over the border into Maryland now. So Congressman Jamie Raskin is my congressman. And this is the first time in over 10 years that I've had that because I live in Washington, D.C., which is in a state, which should be a state. And so I just find him, you know, to be the ultimate mensch who really has a kind heart and tries to push through legislation that really helps people. So there's a lot of good ones. And what I'd say is if anybody's frustrated by who their member of Congress is, they should run for office. We need more people who care about these things, who want to make change to run, particularly women.
Yes, yes. And if you don't feel comfortable running, find somebody in your community who you would love to be in office and ask them to run and get 10 friends to ask them to run too. It often takes, especially for women, at least 7 asks. So don't give up on your first ask. You can give up maybe on your 8th, but don't give up on your first ask. Keep asking. Now we only have 1 minute left and I want everybody again to go to ncjw.org, get involved, stay involved, take action, support. But do you have a last tip for people before we go?
Oh, and it's a night and a day where I'm tired. You know, I would say find people who care about the issues that you care about and surround yourself with them when you can. And make sure to be in relationship with people who feel differently so you can understand what's going on there. I think one of the reasons I'm a great activist is because I have many, many family members who feel very differently than me. And I'm able to actually understand their perspective and bring it into my activism. And so I hate to say I'm like using it against them in these ways, but we have to be in relationship with people in order to make change. So you surround yourself with the people who can lift you up and find people who disagree with you to get a sense of why they feel the way they feel.
I love it. That's spectacular, spectacular advice. And last but not least, join ncjw.org, support ncjw.org. And thank you for taking time to be with us. Thank you for working together in community. And thank you for building a massively effective national coalition for change. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but next up, we're going to talk about positive change at the state level and how that positive change can be leveraged toward national wins from no matter where you live. We'll be back in a quick moment. We're going to fight for love. Me, Kristen Ralph Finkfeiner, powered by Moms Rising. We are joined right now by a returning guest who we know you love, love, love. We have Ruth, the Truth, Martin. Woo! Welcome, Ruth.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. We may also have one of my kids popping in the background.
Kids are more than welcome. And that's one of the things we're talking about. We're talking about how to build a nation where everyone can thrive. And that means everyone of all ages and stages in life. And that means, you know, the complexity of life, which means the people who we love being involved. And Ruth, one of the things that people may have noticed is that there's been a lot of talk about paid family medical leave over the past couple of years since the pandemic started. The talk has been amazing. It's been very good. But we have not yet passed a permanent national paid family medical leave policy. However, we did have the first ever temporary national paid family medical leave policy. I can't even say it. Temporary paid family medical leave policy. Say that five times fast, everyone. Temporary paid family medical leave policy. And then notice how much easier it is to say without the temporary in front. National paid family medical leave policy is so much better. But even though it's slowed down right now at the national level, we've seen states really stepping up to pass the policy and continue that march toward the U.S. Congress. Can you give us a little bit of the inside scoop on where there is hope? And, you know, when we're talking about hope, we're talking about optimism and hard work combined. We're not talking about like, oh, there's hope. Like if we just sit back and do nothing, this will pass. No, we're talking about like optimism and hard work combined. So can you share a little bit about all of that?
Yeah, I think there's been really, really great news just in the last month. Both Delaware and Maryland became the 10th and 11th, or 12th, if you want to count DC as a state, which DC should be a state. But we now have 11 states and the District of Columbia have passed paid family and medical leave laws. And Delaware and Maryland just did it within a week of each other in earlier this month or in April. I don't know what day it is anymore, but very, very recently, both of those states have passed paid leave, which has been really incredible wind in the sails of the forward momentum for paid family and medical leave. Because while Congress and specifically the Republican Senate have failed to advance paid leave at the federal level as part of a reconciliation package aimed at helping build back better after the pandemic, they have not gotten that done. And they have made a political football of something that most people don't see as political, which is what we, you know, why we continue to see this forward momentum at the state and local level. And Delaware and Maryland are certainly a testament to that. So we are really excited about these very, very important wins that have just happened. And certainly a number of other states have been working paid leave policies through the pipeline. We saw, I can't even tell you how many states had paid leave legislation in their last session, and certainly looking forward to seeing a lot more momentum around state vehicles moving paid leave forward in the next Congress, as state sessions ramp back up. Most state sessions have wound mostly down in many, many state legislatures this year. But yeah, we will continue to see progress there, because I think it is really clear to everyone outside of the, you know, Republican corridors of the Senate and one or two senators on the other side of the aisle from my home state who realize that this is actually just such a no-brainer. It helps really lower costs for working families. It helps keep women in particular attached to the workforce, which of course is a critical necessity right now. Is really good for businesses, bottom lines, and helps keep us competitive on a global market. So not at all surprised, thrilled by it. I think we will continue to see this kind of movement forward.
One of the things that sometimes people are like, well, it didn't pass right away, so it'll never pass. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this stuff goes super slow. The Maryland bill that just passed had been introduced in at least four of the last sessions, but that's not even where the groundwork was laid. The groundwork was actually, I was actually just talking to some folks today. We gathered a bunch. I was lucky enough to be, it's sort of a reunion of sorts, with advocates from across the country today and yesterday who are working on expanding and passing paid leave and in their states. And we were reflecting on the fact that this is usually a long haul. Maryland really started talking about taking paid time away from work way back in 2009 when they first introduced paid sick days bill. That bill didn't pass until 2017, was then vetoed by the governor, overridden by the governor the following year. And every year since then, a paid family medical leave bill has been introduced. But there was even paid leave expansion or job protection expansion of unpaid leave happening before that too. So it's been over a decade's worth of work. this is incremental progress that got paid leave across the finish line in Maryland. Having said that, Delaware got it done in 2 sessions. And that is also in part because of the momentum of the victories in other states. So we see like a lot of states advancing things because they're also able to leverage that momentum from other states and things that are happening at the federal level.
It's a big time in history where we need people to register to vote. We need people to take action. What do you think, knowing that families, moms, dads, people are so busy right now, they're busy with work, they're busy with juggling kids, they're busy with all the things. What do you think is the most efficient way to take action?
I think the most efficient way for to take action is whatever way makes the most sense for you at this moment of time. We are strapped for time. We are balancing a lot of things. I take great offense to anybody suggesting that clicking a petition is slacktivism or clicktivism.
I heard that today for the first time. Have you heard that before?
Clicktivism. I have heard that before.
There's no such thing as clicktivism, people. The big thing is be careful who you're clicking with, right? As in any part of life, be careful who you are clicking with. And the thing is make sure that when you are clicking with someone, that they are responsible, carry through with their promises. So at Moms Rising, when you click something, when you click a petition to sign on, when you sign on a letter to click, when you click something that is an action, we are like the U.S. Postal Service of delivery. We will deliver what you click along with the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of other people that click the same thing, creating a wave of change directly to the actual leaders who have the power to make the difference. So I just had to pause there, Ruth, and I agree with you. There's no such thing as clicktivism. Just be careful who you click with and that they actually deliver like Moms Rising does. And continued, I mean, you were sharing more about how you're seeing people have the most effective way to take action and that it's whatever works for them in the moment.
Yeah, because someday it may work for you to click a petition on your phone. Other days you might have the bandwidth to sit down and write out your personal experience with needing paid leave and having it or not having it, or record that video or call your member of Congress or write a letter to the editor. Even just talking to your friends and family about the kind of support that would help make your caregiving work easier is activism, because what we're doing is normalizing talking about it and creating that culture shift. That is all really important pieces of getting this done. So I think, you know, we already have a lot of pressure on us to like do all these things right. We're seeing COVID cases rise and are having to do the mental load of like, do I tell my kid to mask back up? Like, do I have enough home tests? Do I have this? Do I have that? You don't need to like feel bad about what you can and cannot do right now. Talking about this stuff matters. Do the actions you can do that make sense for you at the time. And that's perfect. That's what we got to do.
That's exactly it. And where do you think we'll end up with this pandemic in terms of, do you think we have changed the way we think about care?
I do. I think the pandemic obviously continues to shine a very bright spotlight on what was already an under-resourced, under-supported, broken/non-existent caregiving infrastructure. So I just think we have made it so much clearer that there are problems. You see folks taking to the streets virtually or otherwise to talk about that. And I don't, you know, and the hits just keep coming, right? Like, we didn't have the support that we needed when the pandemic first hit. There was some temporary relief. It didn't go nearly far enough. The surges kept coming. The, you know, being able to access things has been difficult. Now we're struggling to find baby formula in the midst of trying to figure everything else out. There is just a lot going on. And I think that all of it shines a light on just how important and fragile our care infrastructure is. And I don't see how this generation ever goes back from this. And hopefully future generations will look at where we are now and be like, never again do we go back to this kind of situation. So I do think it has changed absolutely both how we think about caregiving. I think it has helped us talk a lot more about caregiving and just how important that is, not just for our individual families, but for the entire country and the economy.
In the last couple minutes that we have left, people who are busy, you said, you know, do what you have time to do. Where should they go to figure out the menu of things that they could take action on? I mean, I think one of the things about being busy and doing what you have time to do is also finding those resources so you don't have to sift through and figure out like who to call, when to call them, what's happening in Congress, where things are happening. Like, what's your advice on finding that fit of, you know, what you have time to do, figuring out the menu of options for you?
Go to momsrising.org. That's what you do.
You can text We Care, all one word, We Care, to 747-464, which is a pretty fun thing. And what we do is we automatically, we'll call you back and then we'll connect you to the office of your U.S. senator, not to your U.S. senator themselves, but to your office of the U.S. senator. And then you could say, you know, here's my care story. You could say, please pass paid family medical leave. You could say, please keep the care infrastructure moving forward. And one of the things that's so important to remember is that your care story is so powerful when you share it. It's really educating leaders about what we need. So you could share if you've had paid family medical leave and it helped you, if you didn't have paid family medical leave and it hurt you, if you have allergies and you're worried about COVID and you should take, you need more access to more COVID tests, you know, you could share whatever you need. And Ruth, what's your advice on sharing your story?
I just think it's so powerful when we share our personal stories, and there's not a person I know that doesn't have some story about needing paid leave and time away from work to care for somebody that they love. I mean, I just this morning shared two of mine. When my youngest daughter was born, she was in the NICU for a while. I had to leave without her when I left the hospital, but I had paid leave, so I could go back every day and spend time with her in the NICU. And I would just look around and so many other babies were there without their parents because they had no choice but to go back to work. Flash forward 10 years later, my mom's diagnosed with cancer. I'm one of four kids. I'm the one who lives the furthest away from her, but I'm the only one that had paid leave. And so out of the four of us, I was the only one that had it, even though my brothers lived, one of them with her and the other one just down the road. So I had to truck across state lines every few weeks to take her to her chemo treatment. So like just within the span of a decade, I needed to use paid leave at least twice, right? And I don't know a single person who doesn't have a story that is similar to that. And when we talk about those stories and we normalize those experiences, we make it clear that it's not an individual problem that we are dealing with. There's a big, big problem, and there are solutions, and we need to demand those solutions. And there is a role for government to play in setting a minimum standard for those solutions. And that is absolutely something that we can do and we should do, and we need to get it done. It's not groundbreaking. It is a proven thing that has been working in a handful of states for over a decade, certainly most other countries in the world. So we're not breaking any new ground here. We just need to get this done. And sharing your story helps with that.
And we can and will get it done. And the evidence of that is that we passed a temporary national paid family medical leave, and we're still passing policies in states like Maryland and Delaware and more. So people, keep raising your voice, keep marching, keep calling, keep getting engaged. We together are going to make this change. We're going to do it. It's not a question of if, but when. And also, please vote. Thank you so much for being on, Ruth. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thanks so much for tuning in as we tackle the top topics facing our nation in a way that requires the most boring disclaimer in the history of the planet Earth. Here goes. Views expressed on this show are those of the individual speakers and should not be attributed to Moms Rising, to this station, or to any news or social media service that may disseminate a recording of this show to the public or to any segment of the public. Boom! We'll catch you next week. We're gonna fight for love.